biggest stories, the best names, and all the big breaking news. The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon is on right now. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Welcome inside the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio with you for the next 3 hours. We've bumped up 1 hour. No best of Boomer today or Friday, as the Calgary Hitmen have begun a Saskatchewan road trip. Last night, of course, the broadcast was internet only, with the Flames at home to the Florida Panthers. Hitmen winning 4-3 in a shootout over Regina. And they will continue that road trip this evening. So we'll have that game for you tonight. And that's why we moved up till noon. A noon broadcast today and a noon broadcast on Friday. Calgary is in Moose Jaw tonight and in Swift Current on Friday. Both of those games with 6 p.m. starts. So as a result, everything's been bumped up. Flames talk at 3. We are 12 until 3. And we're happy to have you along for the ride. Busy, jam-packed show for you. The Calgary Flames victorious last night. My name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon. And Calgary snapped a 4-game losing skid with an impressive 5-1 victory over a red-hot Florida Panther team who came in with a 9-game point streak. That is now over. And the Flames playing a much better game overall. And we'll break that thing down in full right now, as we kick off the show like we always do with our Flames insider. He's Peter Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering air miles, reward miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. Lou, how are you, sir?
I am wonderful. You know, it's interesting over all these years how, you know, commonplace the phrase insider has been and become doesn't fit for what I do. You know, it really, and I know even somebody who is, you know, I think as good as there is in the business at being whatever a hockey insider is, but, and that's Elliot, but it's a fascinating term. And, yes, and I don't think it always,
it's overused.
It is overused and it doesn't always fit, you know, what people bring to the table. So yeah. Anyway, don't ask me why I went there. I just went there. So,
hey, I'm just reading the sheet, my man. Just reading the sheet.
Oh, listen, I know how this game works.
And of course, we love our friends at the Gemini Group who bring
no
you
doubt
this.
About that. Come on, Curtis.
Bring you this segment every day. Yeah. I mean, hey, I think the word analyst definitely suits you better than it does, you know, insider. So we'll go in. And speaking of an analyst, let's analyze what we saw last night. And, you know, Lou, it's funny. We've talked a lot about two different things, it feels like, the last week and a half as we've begun this program. And for me, it was team defense and the power play. I'm not sure that's where you're going in terms of setting the tone, but in a 5-1 victory, both of those things really stuck out. And when you're scoring power play goals, you know, within the first 10 seconds of a man advantage, I think that says a lot about where you are in that man advantage. And obviously, faceoffs were very key on a couple of those goals. But overall, in a 5-1 win against the league's hottest team, Lou, who set the tone for you last night?
Well, I think your play, Will, sets the tone. And do you play closer to your identity? And I agree with you, by the way, on, in fact, in terms of power play goals, 2 power play goals in the first meeting of these two teams allowed Florida to jump ahead and then dictate. And last night, you know, the early power play goal and then the following goal helped the Flames to dictate how it went to. But I don't know about you guys, but early in the game, I thought a tone setter as far as a group of guys was the Backlund line. I thought they turned pucks over. They spent a couple of real quality shifts early, holding on to pucks, making Florida defend or check them. And I think, you know, the group really, really started to feed off some of those shifts. And those are important shifts. And, you know, well, the other hot topic has been center ice play. You know, that's what Darryl referred to and has referred to a lot all season.
Especially
long.
Against that Florida team.
Well, especially against them. But I think it's incredibly important every single night. You're right. I know why you're going there because, you know, of their depth. And there's little doubt that Darryl feels like with some of his team's experience down the middle, that probably there should be more there. And last night, you know, whether it was Sean scoring a couple, of course, one was on the power play. And he did win the faceoff to make that happen. And in fact, I believe the Flames on the power play only lost one offensive zone faceoff last night. So it really set them up, you know, incredibly well. But I thought that line in particular, and the goalie, Will, for that matter.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, again, you make some early saves. But, you know, when the night's all said and done, and you look at it as, you know, in totality, how many shots on goal did Florida have? They had 29. When the Flames are at their best, what are they doing? They're limiting chances. They're checking well. They're making good decisions with the puck. And if you want to go game by game, you know, completely different opponent, and that's why you do have to assess game by game. But coming out of the Ottawa game, you know, I've heard this from so many different coaches, maybe not directly from Darryl, but I know he feels the same way. You want your defense to make plays. In the Ottawa game, no one could make a play. Last night, they were poised. They held pucks. They made good plays. I thought, you know, their defense as a whole, led by Tanev and Shillington, in my opinion, last night, like, just so much better. So much better. And the forwards, you know, they were a connected group last night for the most part. And that just gives you a better chance. You know, it wasn't a 5-1 game the same way it wasn't a 6-2 game for me when they met the first time.
Yep, but, for sure.
Right? But on a lot of nights, what does it come down to? Is your goalie better? Clearly. Listen, it wasn't a great night for Spencer Knight. I know you pointed that out in a text with me, and you pointed it out, you know, on social media last night. It was not the young American goalie's best night, for sure. No, Jacob was clearly the best. Your special teams were best. You know, you did a great job matching up against their top people. You win a game 5-1, and they deserved it. They were better. They played it the way they wanted. And the one thing I'd say about Florida, Will, Florida reminds me so much of Tampa, you know, in Tampa's years before they finally got over. Like, they are so confident, and why wouldn't you? They had 50 goals in their last 8 games. Like, they're deep, and they're fast, and they can score. But in the early Tampa days, I always wondered, because it can be risky, even for the best teams, to get into trade chances types of games.
Yep.
Well, you know, the Flames played their game last night better than Florida did. And they didn't let Florida get to their game anywhere near as often as they did in the previous meet.
Yeah, and Logo, I don't know where you are on that, but, you know, Lou brings up the point about that back in line, and it's funny. I know there was, I think even you talked about it, Lou. I know certainly Darryl Sutter did. You know, the former Lightning, Blake Coleman, for whatever reason, is still in that rivalry because he's played two of his best games as a Flame against the Florida Panthers. And you know, I thought that line was good and just continued to be. It was one of those games for me where, you know, number 88 in red, Andrew Mangiapane, you know, again, played the game like he was about 6'6" last night.
100%.
So hard to push off the puck. He's so good on his edges on the wall. He'll get pushed from behind, but not fall down and stick with the puck. Just so, so impressed by what he can do when he's on it. And I thought that line was great. I don't think it's been a great year overall for Michael Backlund. But again, if this team is going to be A, in the playoffs, and B, you know, have a successful playoff, they're going to need him to be a lot better than what he's been this season. And I thought he was pretty good last night. So, yeah, Logan, I don't know where you were on that line or you know, your takeaways from it. But certainly, you know, again, I think a lot of people look at the two goals for Sean Monahan for his multi-goal game of the season. But I thought he was better even away from it and one of his better games of the year. So, yeah, I think, again, wasn't a great night for Spencer Knight. And by no means is he going to go, yeah, I played really good and gave my team a chance to win. I don't think he was that good, but I'm taking nothing away from the Flames because I thought they got back to a lot of things they did early in the season that made them successful.
Yeah, I don't know, Lou, how you feel. I'm sure you feel the same way knowing how and knowing the conversations that we've had about Michael this year, but I thought that was exactly the kind of game that Daryl and the coaching staff would hope for when he puts that trio together. Lots of hard work. We've talked so much about checking and the effectiveness when that line is doing it. And was it a pretty goal that Blake Coleman scored? No, but it was a hard-working goal. They were all over the puck. They were creating chaos around the net. They skated their bag off last night. And even if they hadn't scored, what have we talked about so much, Lou? That line finally was going out and giving the next line a good opportunity. They were putting that next line in a better spot because of the shift they had. Even if they hadn't scored that goal last night, I still would have felt like they were an effective trio. And I haven't been able to say that about all of those lines or whatever the second line has been all season.
Well, it's very fair. And even think, guys, about, you know, the great play and the great pressure in the scenario where Blake ended up in the net and went between his legs, you know, to try to put it in. Like, early in that game, they were all over it. And they gave, you know, I feel like in many ways, they set a really good work foundation. They turned pucks over. They're, you know, look at the play that Andrew, guys, makes on the goal, Will, that you're talking about. Andrew turned that puck over at center ice that led, you know, to the rush up the ice and some good puck work involving Michael too, you know, that ends up and Blake was in a tough spot. But did you have people around the net? Yes. Did you force a turnover? Yes. Did you get a scoring opportunity? Yes. So, absolutely. Now, Logan, while I have you, outside of, you know, this, what were your big takeaways? What really stuck with you last night about the win?
Well, for me, and it was what me and Will sort of talked about yesterday, was they got back to doing those little things that make them successful. And it was, you know, the hard play in their own defensive zone that led to quick transition, that led to those opportunities. And they were smart with their pucks. They were smart with their opportunities. I think of the stretch play from Gudbranson a couple of times. They were, you know, being able to take advantage of Florida's aggressiveness because of how well they played in their own defensive zone, which is something that you couldn't have said 2 weeks ago in that game in Florida and maybe in a lot of those games on that road trip. And I just thought it was such a great reset last night for the group back to what had made them successful in the first couple of months of the season.
Guys, let's talk about a couple of really key moments in the game tonight, and those were those two penalty kills. One in the first, one in the second. And don't kid anybody. You know, Florida basically had the heat on for the entire 2 minutes in both of those first couple of power plays that they had. Tip your cap to Chris Tanev and Eric Gudbranson, because their shot blocking ability, their play with their sticks to get in lanes, taking away cross crease passes, passes intended into that slot, that bumper area. You know, they did a marvelous job to go along with the guy who's generally your best penalty killer, and that is your goalie. That game could have very easily turned without some of those shot blocks. And the one thing is, you know, even at other levels, well, you played the game. I know that for sure. You still do, Logan. I don't know if for sure if you played as a youngster or not, but one of the most courageous things, and I admit back in my playing days, I didn't love to do it, is blocking shots. But, you know, those types of plays win you games, and it gives your bench a lot of juice. And it was key last night. It really was. And that was another, you know, if you want to call it tone setter or something that I thought the group really fed off of. I mean, that's how you win hockey games. You know, on the highlights, and I get it, I like pretty goals as much as the next person. But that stuff you do in the trenches, those 50-50 battles that you win, those smart exits, you know, under duress, block shots, that's what wins you hockey games. And the Flames did that, and those two guys in particular, you know, led the way in that category. They had 8 block shots amongst them, and, you know, a lot of them came on a couple of power plays.
Do you want to get to the Daryl Sutter clip, Lou, in terms of, I know we've kind of talked around it here, but, you know, he's mentioned and obviously had a lot of the same takeaways as we did. And Logan, if you've got it ready, I guess just Daryl's assessment of what he saw in a 5-1 win last night.
I think our power play, which hadn't been very sharp lately, was really good. Obviously, they scored quick, 2 quick goals, meaning not very far into the power plays, which was really important. I think our penalty kill at the start of the 4-on-3, the second period, was a critical point against a team like that. And I thought Markey was really solid for us when he needed that too.
He did need that. And I still contend, we'll never know, like Elias Lindholm, who, by the way, you know, we might get to that in a second or two too, because the other guys, you know, they did all the damage in the point parade. I thought number 28 looked as energized as he has since this whole COVID situation. He was, and who was he matched up against most of the night? 16, Barkov, not easy. Did a great job. Let's quickly go to Markstrom. Excellent. Dialed in early. I mentioned this, guys, on the post-game show last night, that Jacob's assessment of his own play coming out of the Seattle game, right out of the pause, where he talked about that the game seemed really fast. Well, we talk about that, right, with forwards and defense, that the game gets on you in a hurry. Well, don't forget that that's the same for goalies. In fact, their ability to read the game, goalies never get enough credit for their hockey IQ. And their ability to anticipate what is coming next is more important. Well, you know, when goalies don't get regular game reps, I think it's harder for them than anybody else. I also think he was fighting some form of illness or some kind of injury. I mean, that guy's not coming out. He's going to battle through anything. But didn't you guys think, before we hear from the goaltending coach, Jason LaBarbera, he looked like he was able to slow down the game where he was ahead of it all night long? Guys, either one of you want to respond to what you thought?
Sorry, I thought you were. Yeah, I thought he was dialed in. Sorry, I thought Logan was going to jump in there. No, I thought he was. I thought he was dialed in, and you know, it's one of those situations. And we talked about, you know, whether it's being banged up, and I think you're bang on in terms of even the illness too. I mean, let's be honest, COVID's hit pretty much everybody on this team. Except for 2 or 3 guys, and I know Daryl Sutter's talked about it. He was one of the ones who was hit fairly hard by it. He mentioned it's just part of getting old, but I think you look at everybody, and you know, this is not an easy thing to go through, and it affects everybody differently. And, you know, there's going to be some lingering effects. And I don't think at any point, and it's not to use it as an excuse, and I know you're not doing that either, Lou, but, you know, I don't think this team had a lot of guys feeling 100% right out of the break. And, you know, you win the couple of games, you're feeling good, but then you're also playing, you know, you go from playing nothing to playing games, even though it hasn't been super frequent and you haven't been on a normal schedule. You know, you go from no action where you can't even be at the rink until, you know, and then you're jumping right into game action. It's not an easy thing to do. And so, yeah, I think last night was one of those games where you kind of had everybody feeling it, and Markstrom would be in that same category. And I thought that, you know, he was super engaged and ready from puck drop. And I think that, you know, for him, you know, and really a lot of goaltenders, I think we talk about this with all of the game starters and certainly the number ones across the league. I think sometimes, and, you know, we saw this even in the biggest hockey market, Lou, with Jack Campbell. I think sometimes they're a little too hard on themselves, and they yes. think that, you know, when they don't play well, they've given their team no chance, or, you know, oh, I need to be perfect. I can't allow any goals. And, you know, I think that really hurt Jack Campbell at times last year. I think he's gotten better at that this year, and as a result is having a phenomenal year. And I just think that, you know, when you're playing in the best league in the world, you're expecting perfection. And we love to have that attitude, and you love to see that. But I think sometimes that can harm you more than it does you good. And I think that's absolutely the case with Markstrom at times, too.
Well, we'll come out with Logan after we hear from Jason LaBarbera and talking about, you know, his number one goalie and his performance last night, and really about Jacob overall.
And sometimes, you know, you can, you know, guys like Markey and any really elite athlete, they can be, you know, probably a little bit too hard on themselves at times. And but at the same time, that's what makes them, you know, top guys at their positions. So it's he's such an awesome guy, and he's got great energy about himself, and he wants to win more than anybody. And, you know, as a goalie, you do put that pressure on yourself because you are such an important part of the team, and a big reason why, you know, you do win games and lose games. And he knows that, and that's, again, that's what makes him so special.
I think the biggest part in hearing from Jason there, and I don't know if you guys disagree, is that that's what makes goaltenders great and players great, is that sort of self-pressure. And I think that Jacob falls into that category, certainly, and we've seen that ever since he came to Calgary. I remember, Lou, and I'm sure you'll remember, when we finally got to go back to watch practices and everything, and the one thing that everybody raved about when Jacob came to Calgary was he was so intense during practice, and he hates getting scored on in practice. He doesn't like getting scored on at the best of times, but he hates it during practice. He brings that intensity, and he brings that hard work, and it rubs off on the guys around him. But that's the sort of thing that makes him who he is and makes him an NHL starting quality goaltender.
Guys, I've thought about this a lot in a lot of different ways in a lot of different areas. For most humans that I know, and, you know, most humans that have been really successful, your greatest strengths can also be your greatest weakness. And you can be too hard on yourself, and you can own it too much when things don't go well. And then you put even more pressure on yourself. And, you know, if you're an unbelievably intense, emotional, competitive person, it's a fine line. It really is. Not that I understand, because I can't. I haven't been one. I can't understand what it's like to be in the pressure of a starting goalie in the National Hockey League. How could I? I've never done it. But if you're close enough, or you think you can see some of the makeup, and I know Jacob's talked about it because I asked him the question very early in the season, is he's talked about, you know, your ability to leave a goal behind and leave a tough game behind and get to a better place. And guys, is there, you know, well, I'll go to you. They're just, outside of being a quarterback, can there be a more mentally taxing position, or a starting pitcher in baseball, than a goalie?
Yeah, I mean, I would even say nowadays, Lou, I mean, certainly the last, what, decade or so in pro baseball, I think a closer is a more mentally challenging job than a starter, because you're coming into immediate, you're coming into immediate pressure. And I think that, you know, very rarely do we see starters go three times through the order nowadays. So I do think that's changed a little bit. But yeah, yeah, I think in terms of, in terms of the impact and direct impact on a game, you know, obviously quarterback and goaltender are the guys that, you know, or girls who hold a lot of, you know, weight in terms of how their team does. And they're also the first ones to get the fingers pointed at them when it doesn't go right. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, that also plays a huge role into the amount of pressure you put on yourself too.
Well, and look at this city, and I'm not saying this city is alone, but, you know, in the 10 plus years I've been around Calgary and been around this
team. Oh, yeah, revolving door.
Well, that, and, you know, it's always about, it always seems to be about goalies and coaches here. And I think it's that way in most places, but it sure is here. Yeah.
Yeah. Before we let you go, Lou, I just was thinking about this, and we haven't had a lot of time, and, you know, the Flames don't play for a little while, so I thought maybe today would be a quick chance to talk about it. Of course, they hit me on a road trip right now across Saskatchewan with a big win last night, but I was thinking about you as I watched the Oil Kings and Ice kind of go shot for shot at the deadline. I mean, boy, the Eastern Conference is going to be a lot of fun come the spring.
Well, it is, and, you know, with – they did go toe-to-toe, but, you know, let's talk about Edmonton quickly, and we should probably save this for another time. But the Edmonton Oil Kings now have five Canadian World Junior members on their team. Five. Now, the last time that occurred, you have to go all the way back to 1988 and the Memorial Cup champion Medicine Hat Tigers when they had Rob DeMaio, Mark Peterson, Trevor Linden, Scott McGrady, and Wayne McBean. So it's that's quite a what should we say, core of your team to have that.
You were talking to Curly yesterday. He said, "Yeah, you know, if there's fans that are disappointed the World Juniors were canceled, just come to the Dome next time the Oil Kings are in town."
Oof, man, so alive. You know, and it's going to be fascinating because, of course, you know, those are the two teams, you know, in this side of Western Canada and the United States vying for the title. They're all in. I love it. But I actually think, you know, Winnipeg, when you look at their age and their best people, they might be a year away. Like, I don't think, you know, unless Matthew Savoy or Connor Geeky make the NHL. And I don't think I see that right now, but you never know. They're probably going to play for, you know, the right to contest the Western Hockey League championship. And yes, if you're a fan of the Calgary Hitmen, I wouldn't miss Oil King games if you have an opportunity to go watch that group. They're a lot of fun. And, you know, to the Hitmen's credit and to Red Deer's credit, the Rebels have played the Oil Kings really tough all year long. So it's going to be a fun stretch ride for sure.
Should be fun to watch. And yeah, Hitmen and Moose Jaw Warriors tonight, 6 p.m. on Hitmen. Sportsnet 960. Hitmen! Well, Brian, we'll let you go, Lou. Take
okay,
care.
Guys, have a great day. Bye now.
He is Peter Labardius. He joins us every day to kick off this program. He does so for the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering air miles, reward miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. We'll take a break, come back, continue with the NHL story. It's a quiet night on the ice tonight. And hey, in case you're keeping a close eye on it, the goal watch continues in Washington. Does this player ever age? We'll discuss that and more as we continue. Hour one, live on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon is on now. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Welcome back. Live inside the iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio. It's where we do the show every single day. We're happy to have you along for the ride. A reminder as well, you can subscribe to the podcast and never miss a moment. 960, of course, on your AM radio. Stream us at sportsnet.ca/960. You can also tell your smart speaker at home or at the office to play Sportsnet 960. And download and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Every hour posted shortly after the hour. And you can listen to that on demand at your leisure. We've got a jam-packed show for you today. Will Nault and Logan Gordon along with you. Coming up at the top of the hour, the Calgary Stampeders made yet another free agent signing today as they continue to get work done internally ahead of February 8th, the opening of CFL free agency. We'll talk to Danny Austin at 1 o'clock, and then at 2 o'clock today, we'll start to get you set for the AFC and NFC divisional matchups in the NFL. As we'll take a close look at the Tennessee Titans at 2 o'clock today. And going to use our pal Robbie Stanley's expertise in a couple of different directions or different ways. Tennessee Titans talk and, of course, a little peek at the Nashville Predators, who are in a bit of a slide. As they were, I would say, Logan, a surprise story this season. I did not have them really in the playoffs. I thought at best they could be a playoff bubble team. Winnipeg's struggles have certainly played into that and allowed that door to be opened up for Nashville, but they have taken full advantage and they're in a bit of a weird spot. They played more games than anybody in their division, but they are holding right now the fourth best points percentage in the Central Division, about 500 points up on the Winnipeg Jets, as Winnipeg enters at 571, Nashville at 622, but they've got six games played more than Winnipeg and have an 11-point lead on the Winnipeg Jets. So hypothetically, the Jets could go 6-for-6 in those games in hand and pass Nashville in the standings. And that's always the true saying about games in hand. They're only good if you win them. And those two teams, by the way, will go head-to-head on Thursday. So looking forward to that conversation. And as I say, Logan, not sure where you had Nashville, but I don't know if I had them where they are right now as we approach the halfway mark in the NHL season.
No, I certainly didn't have them that high looking in, you know, battling with Colorado or St. Louis for the top of the Central Division. And looks like it's going to be a tight race down to the end. And you mentioned Winnipeg. You don't think you can count them out just yet. Minnesota looks legit with another year of Kirill Kaprizov. So that whole Central Division is going to make things really interesting because I see, you know, even with Winnipeg off to that somewhat shaky start, still, you know, five potential playoff teams in the Central Division, and how that all plays out with lots of divisional games still to be played the rest of the way. It's going to be interesting. I'll be curious what the feel is in Nashville, where just a couple of years ago we were wondering how the rebuild might start and trading away Matthias Ekholm, et cetera. And now it's, you know, Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene all of a sudden revitalizing some of that offense that Nashville wanted from them. And are they re-signing Philip Forsberg? It'll be interesting to see what Robbie Stanley says about the Preds a little later on.
Was a good night or a weird night in the NHL last night, depending who you cheer for. But, hey, we talked a little bit. I think you mentioned it on headlines, Logan, as we take a quick peek at what happened elsewhere across the league. Calgary with a 5-1 win over Florida. They snapped their four-game losing streak and hand the Florida Panthers their first regulation loss in 9 games. It was a very impressive performance from Calgary. Elsewhere, the Boston Bruins were handed their lunch by the Carolina Hurricanes as Tuukka Rask, this is not what he signed up for when he came back. He allowed 5 goals and was pulled after just 20 minutes, allowing 5 goals on 12 shots as the Hurricanes beat the Bruins 7-1. And what I mentioned, or what I talked about when you were discussing on headlines yesterday, you mentioned the Brad Marchand and Vincent Trocheck drama on social media yesterday. Well, the Carolina Hurricanes social media account rarely misses, And they posted their final score, 7-1, with the photo, like every team does across the league. And the tweet simply said, L stands for Lamborghini. Brad Marchand has since jabbed back and said, you're still the reason we pay 20% in escrow. So this feud is not going away, but I just thought it was funny because the Carolina Hurricanes social media account, some might think it's silly, some love it, but they rarely miss. And they came right for Brad Marchand after beating the Bruins 7-1 last night.
I don't think it was unexpected. The Carolina Hurricanes social media account, as you've said, has never really been shy of taking advantage of these opportunities, whether it goes back to the feud with, you know, Don Cherry and the bunch of jerks or anything like that. They've, you know, the David Ayers t-shirts, the trolling Montreal after the offer sheet to Jesperi Kotkaniemi. This is a group that I think for the better of the league has free range to, you know, have some fun on social media and isn't afraid to just put out, you know, fun tweets. You know, look, there was everyone around that game yesterday was talking about Brad Marchand, you know, saying that Vincent Trocheck is, you know, it's like comparing him to a Lamborghini to a Prius. Everybody around that game knew that was the storyline, and good for them for having some fun with it. They came out on top, and I'm sure there will be times when they're on the other side of it and will have to eat some crow on their own, but it's fun. It's all in good spirits. I think it's better than, you know, just the generic 7-1 or whatever graphic at the end of the night. It's something to talk about, and clearly it's caught Brad Marchand's attention enough for him to be tweeting at them. I love it, to be honest.
Well, we always talk about trying to get to a younger audience, trying to grow your audience, and I think everybody, you know, we're diehard hockey fans, but I don't think you'd be naive if you said that they were anywhere else but probably number four in terms of some of the audiences they can reach among the top four pro sports leagues in North America. I know that baseball certainly is got kind of some of the same issues, and you know, their length of game and kind of, you know, where things are at with baseball playing 162 games in a world where everything's so fast paced and all that is working against baseball. But that being said, I think it's no secret that, you know, hockey would love to grow their audience and continues to try and do so. And things like that are how you do that. And we always talk about wanting more personality. Well, that's what we're getting. And you look at the Leon Draisaitl clip yesterday, and then this, you know, social media feud with Brad Marchand. I think all these things, you know, the old saying, no pub is bad pub. I think that, you know, some of these things, while, you know, you may roll your eyes or think it's silly, I do think it does help when you're talking about trying to reach a broader audience. So I'm here for more of that.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think Carolina's crossed any lines. I don't think that they've, you know, offended anybody. They're just having fun with it. And if Brad Marchand can be upset, then his comment can be, you know, true or accurate if anyone wants to. It's about having fun. It's not about taking things too seriously sometimes. And I think it makes it a more enjoyable evening to, you know, maybe if you're sitting there and you see these headlines, you're kind of excited at the end of the night. Okay, I got to go check out what the Hurricanes are going to tweet about this. Or, you know, is this going to bring the Boston social media team out? Are they going to have some fun to poke it at Carolina? I think it does great. I think the more attention that it gets for your league, the better. And I don't think anybody's hurt by any of this. You know what I mean? Like, as long as you're not crossing any lines or any boundaries, which I don't think they have in any of these situations, go for it.
Elsewhere, we talked about a guy who just does not age and continues to climb the all-time goals list. You can make it now 27 on the season for Alexander Ovechkin. He scored and helped the Capitals to a 4-3 overtime victory over Winnipeg. Ovechkin now has 757 in his career. He is just 9 behind Jaromir Jagr for third all-time at 766. And he's on pace right now for his 9th 50-plus goal season in his NHL career. I've talked a lot about how much I love this guy, how I think he is the greatest goal scorer of all time. Even if he doesn't get to 894 and Ty Gretzky, I think he is the greatest goal scorer of all time. If he played in the same era as Gretzky, I think he could have easily had 1,000 goals. He is just something else and continues to be must-watch TV. And here he is at his age, 36 years old. He is a guy who is just so much fun to watch and leads the NHL when it comes to goals at 27.
It's a remarkable story, and I don't think it's one that's gotten enough pub yet. I think it will as we get closer to reaching that number. And the funny thing is, Will, in all of this, if you go through the lockouts and the shortened season and everything, he would have reached this number easily. Like, it wouldn't have been a conversation had he not missed all the time that we've gone through and only played 45 games last year, and it was a shortened season. Like, that's
his rookie season. Remember, he was drafted in 2004. His rookie season was lost to that 04-05 lockout, which I think he would have guaranteed been in the NHL at 18 years of age. So, it's another 82 games you can cross off.
Yeah, and then the half season in 12-13, I believe. There. So, I mean, you know, talking about a half season again last year, or I guess a little over half, 56 games or whatever it wound up being. And so, you know, add essentially close to two seasons of 40 to 50 goals, and all of a sudden that number for Gretzky's record seems a lot more in reach. And I still think it's very much in reach given how he's going now, but I mean, the fact of the matter is, this is a guy that's just continued to evolve his game and found a way, Will, to continue doing what I think is easily the hardest aspect in hockey, and that's scoring goals on a consistent basis. And you can talk about him having great playmakers around him. You can talk about him being in a good system. And I believe all of that's true, but I think there's an evolution to his game that's certainly underappreciated in my mind for him to continue on the sort of pace that he has. I mean, we've seen guys in this league that have been, you know, dominant scorers for a year or two, but teams, you know, tend to figure them out. How they get played changes, how teams defend them changes, all that sort of stuff makes it more difficult. This is a guy that's never seemingly had that problem. And even when he's had, you know, a down season at 30 goals or whatever it is, he's constantly battled his way back up to that 40-50 range. And to do that is just a testament to how great a goal scorer he really is.
Last year missed some time with his belt with COVID-19. It was the first time in his career that he scored less than 32 goals in a season. That includes the shortened year, as you mentioned, in 2012-2013, when it was just 48 games. He scored 32 that season. 32 was his career low. Did that on two occasions. Had 33 one year. But outside of that, it has been, you know, 40 or more. He had 138 in there as well. But yeah, 24 goals last year, ended his streak of 32 or more. And that's all he does, is score goals. He has 757 now in 1,237 games. And as I say, 9 behind Jágr, 10 to pass Jágr. I think we can all agree that that likely and will happen this season. I don't think he's going to pass Gordie Howe this year. Obviously, that would be an unbelievable season, but at 801, which means 44 more for Ovechkin this season, yeah, that seems unlikely, but we're talking early next season where he's likely in the 800 goal club, which is just two members right now, Gordie Howe and Wayne Gretzky. I would think there's going to be three members of the 800 goal club here pretty soon, as Ovechkin continues to do amazing things, even at his age. And the other thing, too, and the final thing I'll add on Ovechkin, logo, is we talk about all the games missed because of lockouts.
Yeah.
We're also talking about a guy who's been so durable. Yes. You know, 72, 79, 78, 82, 81. The last couple of seasons, obviously the 19-20 year was shortened because of COVID, so he played just 68 games, but barely missed any time there. And then last season, missing 11 games with his belt with COVID, just played 45 of the 56 games. But yeah, a guy who has been so durable and has barely missed, knock on wood, any time with injury in his entire career.
And even just the durability thing is a great point. But the one thing that's maybe overlooked in all of this, as we talk about him and his goal scoring prowess, his point prowess this year is on a level of when he was in like 09-10, his first couple years in the season.
Yeah, he's on pace, I believe, for 114 points this year,
which would be a career high. at 37 or 36 and a guy that's had multiple 100-point seasons. Like, he leads the league in points. He's ahead of Connor. He's ahead of Leon, Huberto, Kadri, all the great years they're having. And look, I mean, I don't know that anybody would blame or look down on Ovechkin if his totals were, say, 27 goals and 15 assists. That's still a very productive player. But, Will, for him to be leading the league in points, too, pretty incredible as he's, you know, we're talking about the goals. The guy's on a point streak, on a point pace that he's never been on in his entire career. He's doing it 36. The guy's a beast.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. And, you know, someone texts in and says, who's better today, Crosby or Ovechkin? I think it's really tough to compare their games. You know, Crosby's had a really tough year this year with COVID. He's missed a little bit of time with injury. Obviously, in his entire career, you talk about durability. Crosby's had some really bad luck with injuries in his career. Certainly, you go back, you know, even 10 years ago, when he played just 58 games over a couple of seasons. One of those was a lockout year. But yeah, I think a really hard job, or it's hard for me anyways, to compare the two guys. I think overall, you know, Crosby's certainly a better player. You know, we're talking about a guy who's got six 100-plus point seasons, a guy who's well above a point per game pace in his entire career. And Ovechkin, as you say, now is on a career high and on pace for 114. But, you know, as good as a goal scorer he was never a guy who, you know, really saw or we saw get more than, you know, 40 assists in a season. And I just think it's hard for me to say that Ovechkin's a better player than Crosby. I think they're obviously very different. But in terms of all around, and if I was to pick one guy to be on my team in like a game seven situation, I'm still picking Sid.
Yeah, I think just the overall game, you probably have to side with Sid, because with all due respect to what Alex does on a goal-scoring thing, Sid's done it in a point, you know, maybe in a less flashy way, and you add in all of the defensive prowess. I don't want to say that Alex was always just an offensive guy, but that's something he developed, you know, that full 200-foot game later in his career. For a while there, remember, Will, we were talking about him just being an offensive threat and not doing enough for his team at both ends of the ice. Sid's always been that guy. Sid's always been that true elite number one center. And I know if Pat was here, if he's listening, he's definitely talking too about the position that each guy plays, right? That's, you're also comparing a difference there between a center and a winger. And you're right. It is hard to compare at the end of the day, but I just think if you're looking and you have to remember some of the really hard. It's some people, I think, just forget about how good Crosby was at putting up points for so long. And you add that to the other things that he did in his game. It's not a slight on Ovechkin, because Crosby's one of the best to ever do it.
Just the one quick one, and then we'll hit the break. We've got to get the break because we've got a guest around the corner. But I'm curious about Ovechkin and why you think it's easier to score in Gretzky's era. I know Gretzky said the same thing. I would have said that it's been harder to score back then because of all the clutch and grab. And yeah, I know there was clutching and grabbing, but all you got to do, and in my opinion, I know that even, again, when you're comparing eras, did Gretzky have the stick technology that we have today? No, he did not. Everybody was using wood sticks, and you don't have the type of whip, and guys weren't shooting as hard as we're seeing today. But for me, and why I say that, is all you got to do is look at clips of goalies. You know, we didn't see butterfly. We saw a lot of stand up. We didn't see the gear as big as it is today. Goalies weren't as big, period. I mean, how often did we talk, Logan, about goalies having to be like a minimum of 6'3" or 6'4" to be successful? So that for me is the biggest reason. It's just such a different game. And, you know, guys were scoring 70, 80 goals because of the fact that just you didn't have goalies that went down and didn't have a ton of gear. And it was just such a different style.
And even to that point of the clutch and grab era, Ovechkin at 6'3", almost 240 pounds, I think he would have held his own out there.
Yeah, he would have been all right.
I think he would have done okay.
We got to get to a break. We're live in the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio. When we come back, they continue to get some business done. Another big and key offensive line signing for the Calgary Stampeders. Talk about that and more as they continue to do some very strong and important internal business ahead of CFL free agency. Danny Austin in moments as the Big Show goes into hour two next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.